As many of you know, I've been on vacation for the last couple of weeks, and I was a bit concerned about how I was going to preach this morning, and then my good friend Mike said that he'd been enjoying preaching at other churches. So I said, Mike, have I an opportunity for you? So I'd like you to welcome the Reverend Mike Everston to our pulpit this morning.
Of course, please be seated. Thanks to Reverend Carroll and to St. Benedict's and to God. It is always a great privilege to worship, isn't it? And a very humbling privilege to preach. So let the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, dear Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. When I'm driving, my car's music system mostly plays Broadway musicals. When it's short trips in the electric car, I usually hear short clips from the musical Hamilton. But for longer drives in my wife's car, the music I've sung along to for the last 2 months has been Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Some of you nod. I think some are familiar. With that, it was Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber's first musical. It's been produced over 20,000 times. It has mostly light-hearted music drawn from many different musical genres. And the reason I've been singing it, playing it the last 2 months, is because the lectionary has been giving us scriptures from Genesis for the last 2 months, except that the lectionary has only brought us so far as Joseph's parents, whereas Joseph is all about Joseph. But today, hooray, the lectionary has finally caught up with Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. So tell in today's verses in a different way. As the narrator sings, next day, far from home, the brothers planned the repulsive crime. And Joseph's brothers sing, let us grab him now, do him in while we have the time. Narrator, this they did and made the most of it. Tore his robe and threw him in a pit. Then some Ishmaelites, a hairy crew, came riding by. In a flash, the brothers changed their plan. The brothers sing, we need cash. Let's sell him if we can. And before long, one of the main musical themes of Joseph is introduced. Poor, poor Joseph, what you gonna do? Things look bad for you, hey, what you gonna do? Poor, poor Joseph, sold to be a slave. Situation's grave. Yes, sold to be a slave. And that musical theme, poor, poor Joseph, will recur many times. So a few songs later, it's poor, poor Joseph, locked up in a cell. Things aren't going well. Locked up in a cell, and even the most powerful man on earth soon has his troubles. Poor, poor Pharaoh, what you gonna do? Dreams are haunting you, what you gonna do? And that's enough singing for me. For now, because by starting the sermon this way, I've dug myself into a pit. And it's a pretty common pitfall for preachers of Joseph's story. You see, the account of Joseph and his brothers, which fills the last 14 chapters of Genesis, is a profound and mature story, but it's most often experienced as a children's story. The story of Joseph and his brothers resolves many of the tensions earlier in Genesis, rivalries that still haunt us today, but Joseph's story is mostly passed over by the lectionary, given only at 2 Sundays out of 3 years of Sundays. And now I've gone and done the same thing. I'm treating Joseph lightly. And it's good fun that way. Sunday school children for a long time have had a marvelous time throwing little brothers into the pit. And youth groups have gleefully replayed the lustful older woman who tears the toga off handsome Joe. Genesis 37 through 50 makes great melodrama. Yet the story of Joseph is also profound. So I have to switch sides right now from the silly to the serious. And that starts with this. It's not a light thing to be thrown into a pit, sold to be a slave, locked up in a cell. You probably know that our United States holds the largest number of incarcerated people of any nation on earth. We're second among the nations in the highest percentage of our population locked up in jail or prison, second only to a tiny nation, the Seychelles Islands. The Seychelles have 750 people in jail, 1% of their total population. We have 2,220,000 incarcerated, just under 1% of our people, plus another 4.8 million out on probation. And as for slavery, well, that's illegal everywhere in the world, except reputable organizations that are dedicated to truly ending slavery estimate that there are still 20 to 50 million people still enslaved in the world, held against their will, compelled to do involuntary labor, sold reportedly for as low as $50 for a lifetime of physical or sexual labor. The nations with the highest percentage of slaves are Mauritania and Haiti, each with 4% maybe of their people enslaved. The United States has a much better record there, although I will never forget that the most publicized bust of slavery in my lifetime came right in my hometown, El Monte, California, 1995. There, 72 Thai nationals were freed from slavery from a two-story boarded-up chain lock garment factory. The 72 women had been lured from Thailand with promises of a better life, but here they were forced to work 16 to 22 hours a day with 24/7 guards and no contact with the outside world allowed. When the U.S. Department of Labor and California Labor Commission and El Monte Police finally broke it up, some of the women had been enslaved 7 years. Neighbors did not know it. I'll put in a good word here for many people, including the Episcopalian Church of Tuhunga and the United Methodist Church of North Hollywood, both of whom gave shelter to the released slaves. And thanks also to U.S. attorneys who won a $4 million settlement for the victims against the manufacturers and retailers who profited from their labor. The last I read about this said that all 72 had been settled as naturalized U.S. citizens and all were gainfully employed at a working wage. At the same time, I do want to put in a good word for many who work and who volunteer with prisoners, with organizations like this Kairos Prison Fellowship, or Prison Fellowship itself, or Prisoner to Pastor. I don't know a lot about those organizations, for we each have our own gifts, and we each have our own limits about what we can do. Still, you know, anybody can fall or be pushed into a pit sometimes, like Joseph. And thanks be to all who help people out from the pits, that we fall or are pushed one more word of thanks to another group that I promised to give this morning. I attend, when able, your Earth Care group here at St. Benedict's. That group is sponsoring many life-affirming events during the season of creation coming this September. And then on the first weekend of December, your church is sponsoring a visit from the eminent and imminent green theologian, Reverend Matthew Fox, coming to St. Benedict's. But that's not what I want to push, to pitch right now. Several members of Earth Care have recently seen the movie An Inconvenient Sequel. See it if you can. It's still playing at the Palm Theater in San Luis through this Thursday. What I most noticed about this film was Al Gore saying that setbacks of sometimes plunged him almost to despair. But he has not succumbed to environmental despair. And that rang very true to me. We all get that sinking feeling sometimes. Al Gore points out that we need not succumb to it. And Joseph, son of Jacob and Rachel, is another one whose experiences led him to become a master at escaping despair and coaching others at how not to succumb to despair. Joseph, at 17 years old, entering the prime of life, beloved by his father, wearing that splendiferous robe, lost it all in an instant when his brothers attacked him with intent to murder him. Poor, poor Joseph, what you gonna do? Well, the lesser of two evils saved his life as eldest brother Reuben persuaded the others not to kill him, just throw him down a cistern where he'll starve, he'll die of dehydration. Poor, poor Joseph, what you gonna do? Well, brother, again, lesser of two evils, save him. Brother Judas said, we don't want his blood on his hands. Let's sell him as a slave. So poor, poor Joseph, sold to be a slave. Again, he caught a break. Was sold to be a house slave instead of a field slave. Still, poor, poor Joseph, what you gonna do? Well, he made his own choice this time. He made himself the best house slave he could be. He became the chief steward of Potiphar's plantation. And then it all collapsed again. Falsely accused of sexual assault, locked into a cell. Poor, poor Joseph, locked into a cell. Well, this prisoner became a best friend to the guards and to some of the convicts as well. And from prison, suddenly he was called to give counsel to Pharaoh. Not necessarily a good thing. You could just as easily die as live if you didn't say exactly what Pharaoh wanted to hear. But somehow Joseph managed to counsel Pharaoh so well that Joe rose instantly to become CFA of Egypt. The Bible must have left out a few steps there. It must have, but even then, poor, poor Egypt and world faced with 7 years of famine. Somehow, though, by this time, Joseph has mastered administration and crisis management. He saves thousands of lives, including, finally, the lives of his own brothers and families. How does he do that? Tell us your secret of overcoming, Joseph, as Pharaoh sings. Hey, 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 Joseph, please tell me, what does it mean? Oh, yeah. And this is Mike speaking, not Pharaoh. Now, for garden variety level, of that sinking feeling, there are some home remedies that you all know. We may not practice these so so well, but we all know them. To name three, movement, music, and nature have power to lift us up from the pits, walking or running or swimming or bicycling or mountain climbing or dancing or physical therapy go a long ways to enhancing well-being. And music, especially if we sing it or remake it, is also a strong remedy for the blues, even if it's the blues we're singing. Probably every kind of music hath charms to heal our hurts. A third remedy that you all know for our hurt and pain is nature. Whether it's the garden or the beach or high in the Sierras or in the Sierra Club or golfing or gazing at the stars, being in nature gives us a lift up from sadness. You know this. Nature, music, and movement are natural healers. But Joseph shows us more. Joseph seems to have learned and coached three powerful practices that lead out of despair. First is that he looked for the seams, the cracks, in any tight place. He grew toward the light when there was very little light. That's why I mentioned him benefiting from the lesser of two evils several times. He became a master at finding the openings, finding a way when there was no way. A second despair-busting trait in Joseph is that he used his own God-given gifts. As the narrator sings, strange as it seems, there's been a run of crazy dreams, and a man who can interpret could go far. Well, Joseph is a gifted dreamer, an interpreter of dreams, and that probably helps him also develop his powerful gift for administration. The third despair-beating practice of Joseph is that he found common ground with others. He found common interests with Potiphar and with fellow convicts and with Pharaoh. And finally, with his own brothers. He was adroitly led his own brothers to see what they had in common. Now I'm way ahead of the scripture. I'd better wrap up the sermon by telling of an old friend who on a small scale used the same three despair-busting skills that Joseph used. John was literally an old friend. We celebrated his 100th birthday together. John could still take care of himself, but his wife, Margaret, had to move to a skilled nursing facility. John moved with her so that she didn't have to be in a locked facility. That's a seeking the lesser of two evils, looking for the openings that still allow hope and freedom. Still, the nursing home wasn't the best of living situations, so John put his gifts to work. He had the greatest thumb of any person I've known. Plus, he liked people, so John gathered pots and cups and cuttings of plants wherever he could get them. As soon as plants grew and spread, he gave his flowering plants to any resident who wanted them, and of course that was everybody there. Finally, administrators of the nursing home, they liked John, but they felt they had to keep this nursery within the nursing home within limits. John, you can't grow green plants in the hallways. We need access for the wheelchairs and the EMTs. Well, then, where can we grow them? How about in your office? The cooks like the potted plants, not the kitchen, okay. How about in the dining room, where they'll give beauty and oxygen, and they won't cost you a dime? Administrators caved and said, well, let's try it. John made a desert broom in one skilled nursing facility. After his wife died, he stayed there because he was now part of a beloved community of plants and new old friends. Well, There's one more week of Joseph in the lectionary, as well as an unending supply of the Gospels and the Psalms and the Epistles. Enjoy and learn from them all. Amen.